Chris, welcome to another podcast. We hit the big 4-0. This is the 40th episode. Evening, gentlemen. How are you, Howell?
Yeah, good, thank you.
And how are you, Leon?
Great, thanks. How are you guys?
Okay, we're waiting for Daniel. We don't know where he is. If you see him, tell him to hurry up. He may make an entrance a bit later on. Maybe that's what he's looking to do. Since we last recorded, which was in the aftermath of the Moldova game, the great Mel Charles passed away, and there was quite a lot of sort of touching sort of tributes and obituaries to him. In the shadow of his brother a lot, his autobiography cites that, the title of it is you know, alludes to being in the shadow, and virtually every kind of episode in his life he talks about, he's kind of like benchmarking it or comparing it with whatever sort of John was doing. But I thought it unfairly sort of portrayed him as being some sort of, you know, but quite an inferior player, which I think is actually quite unfair. I think he was a top player, and a lot of the touching sort of tributes suggested that.
Can I just say, Russ, wasn't he voted in the team of the tournament for the 1958 World Cup?
Yeah, he is. Which, one of the centre backs.
Yeah, you have to be pretty good to get voted in the team of the tournament, don't you? So that says something about his level of ability.
Particularly, had like free scoring Brazilian team, free scoring French team with Juste Fontaine. You had a great Swedish side that had some, you know, legendary sort of strikers, and. Yeah, and he'd have been only about, I think, 21, 22, 23 when he got in there. Injuries probably did for him at Arsenal. And there's a great chapter about how Tottenham and Arsenal were really pulling out all the stops to try and trump each other, trying to sign him. He plumped for Arsenal, but of course, it's Spurs that went on to do the double in 61, win in Europe, and had a really, really great side.
Yeah.
But Spurs were desperate to sign him. And you kind of maybe read between the lines that maybe there was a little bit of regret, but he was extremely fond of Arsenal, and although he didn't play too many games because of injury, you know, he has a sort of great sort of relationship with that club, and it's a really, really good book. It's worth it's worth tracking that down if you're looking at something a little bit different. Reviewed it earlier in the year.
Just to say sorry again, Brazil won the semi final 5-2, and I think they won the final 5-2 as well. So the fact that free scoring Brazilian team could only put one past us in the quarter final says something about how good our defence was in that tournament, and what a good player Mel Charles was.
No, absolutely. Injured at Arsenal a lot, as is Aaron Ramsey increasingly. He's still out injured. That was a tenuous link, I only just popped into my head. And this week, there's whispers that he might struggle now for our next game, which, you know, against Serbia, which, you know, to be still injured for, when's that game? November.
November 12th.
Picked up a hamstring injury on the first day of the season. That is shocking. Mm-hmm. And Coleman, I thought Coleman was pretty to the point in the press conference in relation to Arsenal. There was no banal sort of platitudes or sort of, you know, straight back replies. Really, really disappointing. We'd long since obviously sort of come to terms, had we? We'd realised he was not going to be available for this double header, but for him not to be available for another 6 weeks. It's a real worry.
Yeah, it's a blow, isn't it? And they haven't got a very good, I mean, Arsenal haven't got a very good record, have they, in terms of working with injured players. There's a lot of question marks around their approach to dealing with injury. As you know, their extensive injury list has shown over the course of the last 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Players like Walcott and Wilshere.
It's a big blow for us, and it's real encouragement for them that we're going to be without our real playmaker, the man who makes us tick, really. Gutted about it. I just, you know, because living out here, I don't get to see us play as often as I'd like, and Ramsey's just one of those players I love watching so much that I'm gutted that I won't get to see him play. I'm really thinking it's about time he seriously thinks about leaving Arsenal, because it's sort of past a joke now, really. I think this whole injury situation. I used to be of the opinion that Wenger showed a lot of loyalty to Ramsey. He was criticised quite a lot, Ramsey, when he came back from his injury, and you know, people didn't think he was worth his place in the side, and Wenger kind of picked him and stuck with him, and he eventually came good, and I thought, yeah, you know, Ramsey should stay at Arsenal for a while, because he really owes Wenger. But I'm just so pissed off with this sort of constant injury nonsense with Arsenal that, you know, Ramsey, I think he might have outgrown him, and he's still not particularly rated by Arsenal fans, which seems bizarre, and he's still not particularly rated even by the English press, by the sort of London press, which I find bizarre. So I just feel like if he gets the opportunity to go to somewhere like Barcelona, there's been talk of Barca being interested in him, then it should go.
I mean, Arsenal fans are interested in certain. You could do a whole podcast on them alone. I mean, when I'm reading people, it sort of swings between Ramsey, the world's greatest player, and Ramsey, the world's worst player. And it's not just him, is it? It's Ozil, the world's greatest player one week, world's worst player the next week, you know. I find it mystifying that they, you know, and that they haven't, you know, they don't seem to understand how good he is.
Well, I mean, he was in the team of the tournament, wasn't he, for the Euros?
I mean, his stock has never been higher.
No.
So I don't think he's going to fight. He's going to have a problem. If he were to leave, he's not going to have a problem finding another club, is he?
Unless, of course, there's this recurring doubt on the part of other clubs that, is he injury prone? Well, there's being injury prone and there's having your injuries managed badly by your club.
I think Arsenal's record is, it speaks for itself. You know,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, he didn't have any problems in the summer, did he? Playing 5 games in 2.5 weeks, did he, for Wales? He was fit for the semi-final, it's just he was suspended.
Yeah.
So he would have been fine playing 6 games in 2.5, 3 weeks without getting injured. It's Arsenal have the problem, which needs sorting out, which Wenger simply isn't prepared to sort out because he's so stubborn, it seems to me.
If a top club is interested in him, they're going to want him to play 50, 60 games a season, because those clubs are going to be in the business end of every tournament they're in. And that, I think, is where there's this nagging doubt. For whatever reason, or for whoever is to, you know, is to blame for that, I think that would probably be the thing that just casts, you know, puts a little bit of doubt into the top clubs' minds about him. Which I think is a shame, because, as you say, his stock has never been higher, and it's never been higher, and he's sitting on the physio couch at the minute. Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing that's frustrating about it is that there's no end date, you know, and that's the thing I find that you see a lot with Arsenal players.
Yeah,
they're not out for a month, are they?
No.
You know, initially they've got a bit of a pull, and Wenger's saying, they might be involved in next week, and then all of a sudden you don't see him for a month, and now we're looking at something that's quite long term.
Yeah,
and it doesn't even to be what is actually wrong with him. Mm. You know, what is the actual diagnosis? You know, and it's. It's frustrating, I think, isn't it?
The other disappointment then, though, is that in terms of his role in the Wales team, you know, the players to come in are potentially Johnny Williams and Emma Hughes. Johnny Williams is still injured. Wrote a blog about him a couple of weeks ago, asking, you know, where does he go now? You know, he's injured and on loan at Ipswich Town again. And as I was researching that, I hadn't sort of picked up on this, he's never started a game in the Premier League. He's come off the bench a few times, but he's never started a Premier League game. And we have a lot of Wales fans have got a lot of time for him. There's very few players, I think, that are. You just hear such good things about them all the time, about how positive they are, how great they are to have around the camp, what great personalities they got, you know, what great people they are, that sort of stuff. It all counts for little though when you're kind of again just on the physio room all the time. And Emma Hughes is barely playing for Cardiff City, so I think we're going to go probably just with that, which we've done before. We go for probably Edwards, King, Allen, Ledley, variations thereof, and you go for a bit more of a workman-like, industrious midfield. And it lacks a little bit of the Garland, a bit of the craft that you'd want in Austria, and that's the worry. And it probably burdens Bale, because he's really not going to be our own attacking, creatively speaking, outlet. So do Austria just look to do a number on him, gang up on him?
Thank God Joe Allen seemed alright today, because there was talk of him having hamstring injury. I didn't watch the game.
He was very good.
Yeah,
he was excellent.
Scored, didn't he? A lot of people saying on Twitter he was the best player on the pitch.
Yeah, he was excellent.
Just seemed a huge relief, because I thought we were going to be without Allen as well, and Ramsey, and Johnny Williams. I could really see us struggling against a pretty strong Austrian midfield, really. That's where the strength in that Austria team is, in their midfield. So to go there without our kind of technicians, our sort of playmakers, would be a real worry. But thankfully, Alan seems to be on his game. He's been the sort of one bright spark for Stoke so far this season, hasn't he?
Well, who said as much, didn't he, this week? Like, he made reference to Joe Allen and how well he's been playing. Yeah, and he was excellent again today. He's just so assured. He's just really grown as a player. But I think, you know, I know there's been criticism of the move to Stoke, but, you know, you sense that he is the main man in that team.
Yeah, he's scored twice for them, hasn't he, already?
Yeah.
In only 5 or 6 games. And then the one Wales goal as well against Moldova means he's scored 3 times already this season. So I always felt like he did have more goals in him, and that was maybe one of the criticisms that Liverpool fans and maybe Jurgen Klopp wasn't so keen on him, because he just didn't think he was going to put the ball in the back of the net enough. But that one Premier League season he had with Swansea, I think he scored a few goals, and I just feel like he's capable of going on a bit of a run now with Wales, now he's got that first goal on his 32nd or 33rd cap, something like that. I think he might score a few goals over the course of this campaign now. He's playing a bit further forward for Stoke, so that's quite promising with Ramsey and Johnny Williams out, that maybe Alan can play a bit further forward and maybe he can be the man to sort of link up with Bale.
Yeah,
that's when he was at his best for Liverpool last year, was when he was a bit more advanced, actually. Yeah, I don't think he's, you know, he's played the role well, but I don't think he's not really a midfield destroyer, is he? He's not going to fly around the park clattering into people. He can do that, but, you know, he's a very gifted footballer. Technically, he's not many better than him in the Premier League.
No, I agree, and he's probably kept Hughes in the job for another week at least, probably a fortnight through the international break with that goal.
Yeah,
because he's been under pressure, Hughes, because he spent a lot of money.
Yeah, I think they've got Sunderland's next up, yeah. And they've got a sort of run against the lower end teams. If they pick up a few wins, I think it'll be service as usual.
I'd be interested in seeing, as you say, Leon, I'd be interested in seeing him be a bit more advanced out in Austria, because, you know, it's one thing, I suppose, doing that at home against Moldova, but against a far, far better side away from home, you know, that's going to be a big test. Like you say, you know, you could have maybe sort of Edwards, King Ledley, just sort of shadowing. And what they were doing, I thought was really interesting against Moldova, was that they were sort of taking it in turns to go wider, to sort of one go, one hold, and it just seemed a lot more sort of fluid, I thought, in the middle of the park. And I think that's a shame that we haven't got the full complement, so that we can kind of continue to explore that sort of tactical variation with your full complement of midfielders. We're doing it with players that are going to get a game here, a game there. Not that I've got anything against the likes of Edwards and King. I think, you know, they've done okay for us. But you'd want to be seeing that with the likes of Ramsey or Williams involved, wouldn't you? But, you know, Coleman hasn't really made much of it. He's just, again, typically as he does in his press conferences, he comes out, says, you know, this is who we have got. This is what we're expecting to do. The whole setup, the whole approach to every camp just seems to be so well thought through, and everyone knows their role, they know the drill, that it's that kind of seamless. If someone isn't available, someone else comes in, yeah. And it's an opportunity for them. And it sounds very cliche, but it is that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Coleman sending out the sort of right messages to the players as well. Because if he goes into a press conference and just goes on and on about the players being missing and injured, yeah. What do then the players who are available think of that? Because they're not going to be as confident going into the game that the manager thinks they can do the job as well as those players who are missing. I think it's psychologically it's quite important that I think Coleman's been great doing this, that you don't make excuses before the game, you know, maybe make excuses afterwards if it doesn't go well, but don't do it before the game. And Coleman's been great like that, even at like out in Andorra. He said, you know, that when he saw the pitch his heart sank, and it's the worst pitch he'd ever seen. This is going back to the last campaign, obviously. But he didn't say that before the game. He said that afterwards. And I think that's really important. You've got to look at what we have got. We've still got really good players. And, I mean, you know, we've got enough to beat Austria, even without Ramsey and without Johnny Williams. So, there's no reason for us not to be confident about even winning this game. Or a draw would be a great result as well.
Because we said it before the last podcast, a few players started the season slowly, they weren't getting game time. Ledley's back in the Palace side. King has been playing for Leicester. You know, Danny Ward is sitting top of the Championship and not conceding many goals at all. Okay, Hennessy's back on the bench. Taylor, Neil Taylor of Swansea seems an odd one.
I think it's difficult, isn't it? He's playing Norton, left back, Rangel, right back. I think Neil Taylor would be the first person to probably say, you know, there was that quote, wasn't there, when he said basically something along the lines of, he was gutted, it was all over. And, you know, in terms of just being mentally right, I'm not sure he was mentally right to start the new season.
Really?
Not, and that's not a criticism of Neil Taylor, because, you know, ultimately, as he said, it was probably one of the great, if not his greatest footballing experience. You have that incredible high. And then, you know, we do forget sometimes that it is a job, and then you're back into the, you know, run of the mill stuff, perhaps.
Mm.
I don't think there's been a huge clamour for him to be, from fans for him to be back into the team.
Mm.
Again, not a criticism of him, you know, whether Guidlin doesn't fancy him, I don't know.
But we still go with him a left back, don't we? We don't really want to move Davis back out there because that settles back 3 years.
No, he starts for us, doesn't he? You know? He's the incumbent.
Davis played a little bit for Spurs. I think he played well in the Champions League in the week out in Moscow, didn't he? And that's sort of a positive because there have been plenty of Wales fans who've been Don Pochettino and think that Davis should leave. But I mean, Spurs will play a lot of games. They're in Europe. They'll want to win a cup, I'm sure, this season. I think Davis will play quite a lot. And that's another kind of positive since the start of the season as well.
But he didn't play today against Manchester City, and it does seem to be the continuation from last year that, generally speaking, Rose plays the league games, Davis plays more of the cup games. But, you know, if that's Champions League, then, you know, it's not the end of the world. But as you say, it's a huge season for Spurs.
They're a good side, Spurs,
And, you know, Pochettino's going to want to achieve something in Europe. Because it's so competitive at the top end again now, that of the Premier League, that, you know, you can't sort of go, well, okay, let's dip our toe in the water for a couple of seasons, see how it goes, just kind of get used to it, because there's no guarantee that necessarily they're going to be there next year. So I think it's a case of, like, right, we're in it, let's go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Davis is playing those games, not the Premier League, he's not playing against Sunderland or West Brom, he's playing, you know, in Moscow, I can live with that. From a full Wales point of view, I mean, there might be some Spurs fans who've got other views, and Swansea fans who'd love to have him back, or whatever, but from a purely Welsh point of view, that suits me fine.
I think he'll end up probably at the end of this season in the same sort of position as Joe Allen, in the sense that I think he'll realise that if he's not in the plans to start in the league, then he's going to have to go somewhere else.
That's intriguing, wasn't it? Because there's been rumours about Chelsea, because Conte, again, was one of the only other teams in the Euros with Italy to play with three centre-backs.
Mm.
You know, traditionally you'd want those Italian centre-backs to be comfortable on the ball. The middle one's going to play a bit more of a traditional super role as well. Davis fits that perfectly, doesn't he?
And the
Chelsea defence isn't getting any younger.
No,
so that was quite an intriguing sort of transfer. Not that I get turned on by just any Welsh players being linked with, like, you know, so-called big clubs, but just that, you know, when Chelsea tend to buy, they tend to buy big, and they want, you know, like with sort of the likes of Cahill and players like that, you know, they're quite happy to buy a player to put him straight in the side if it fits a game plan.
Mm.
And Italians, if nothing else, are very pragmatic coaches by and large. And I don't know, I thought that was quite an intriguing sort of transfer rumour. And there's probably nothing in it, but still.
Oh, it'd be great for him, wouldn't it? It'd be a great move for him. But I just think he's at a point where at the end of this year, he'll need to go somewhere and he'll need to, you know, to my mind, look, we can talk about him playing enough games and all the rest of it, but he's a first team footballer, isn't he? And he's got to decide whether he's happy to take that bit part role. And, you know, Joe Allen this summer said, you know, I'm sure Klopp would have said to Joe Allen, look, we'd love to have you around the squad. You know, if you're happy to only play in the League Cup, the FA Cup, come off the bench.
Mm.
And, you know, and I think it was a good thing for Allen that he said, no, I'm going to go somewhere, I'm going to be the main man, and, you know, backed himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great that he's playing week in, week out now, but I'm still a bit surprised after the Euros that he had that he kind of made this move from Liverpool to Stoke, because it used to be, if you were like one of the star players at a tournament, you'd kind of move up to a bigger club now. It just seems like there's this sort of weird disconnect between international football and club football, where managers don't seem to sort of seem to care, you know, what players are doing at international level so much. When it comes to sort of like, you know, looking to recruit players, you just remember like Poborski doing well at Euro 96 or whatever, and he goes to Man United. You know, Joe Allen does well at the European Championships and then moves to Stoke. It's supposed to be a different thing nowadays, doesn't it?
I think there would have been a number of factors in involved in his decision to go to Stoke. I think there would have been a lot of clubs interested in taking him. I think a lot of clubs, the fact that he had 1 year left on his deal, I think that would have driven the move, in the sense that a lot of clubs would have said, oh look, we'll leave it, you know, till January, you know, we'll come back for you in January, you know, maybe even leave it a year. I think that would have been a problem. I think that was certainly the issue with Swans. They weren't going to pay 15 million quid for a guy with 1 year left on his contract. That's probably the issue there. He probably thought to himself, do I want to go back to the Swans, or do I want to move on and progress? Stoke, he isn't going to move. He can probably still live in the same place. He's probably living in leafy Cheshire somewhere, isn't he?
Hmm.
Yeah, he doesn't have to move all his animals.
That's right, yeah. So I think, you know, that would have been a driver. You know, and look, I know Stoke isn't a fashionable club, but you know, they've got Shaqiri, they've got Arnautovic, they've got Bojan. You know, he's building something there, yeah. Isn't he, potentially? I mean, it hasn't gone particularly well for him so far this year, but you know, they've got a good ground. You know, they fill the ground every week, 30,000 fans. Hughes would have sold it to him and said, look, you know, you're the missing link, you're the thing that'll take us from 9th to 6th or whatever.
I think there's something fundamentally more pragmatic about it as well, is that this new TV deal with Sky has just changed the financial dynamic,
absolutely,
and the parameters. So just as ridiculous in some respects is the fact that Mahrez and Vardy stay at Leicester.
Yeah.
Because the other received wisdom is you have a great season like Mahrez did for a club like that, who overachieve. I mean, okay, overachieved more than any other club's ever overachieved, sort of thing. But usually they then just get picked up by, you know, one of the big 4 to 6 clubs. That's just tends to be how it goes, because they can't compete on in terms of buying power, in terms of the wages and everything else. Yet they've held on to Mahrez, held on to Vardy.
Yeah.
Okay, they lost Kante, but again, that was quite remarkable, I thought, as well. So, you know, the parameters of the game are, financially speaking, they're different. So to be fair, you know, you talk about Poborski in 96, it's almost kind of ancient history. And I'm not sure the comparison on purely sort of the finance and sort of economic grounds is a valid one. I just think it's just changed in this last year or so, last couple of seasons, with this new TV deal, and the purchase power of your mid-ranking clubs is enormous, and it comes down to whether they can perhaps sort of sell a vision to a player. You know, Alan will know obviously all about Hughes, and Hughes is, you know, a legend, you know, in a lot of sort of Welsh players' eyes, so that's something. But where was he going to go? I mean, were West Brom going to stump up the cash, or Sunderland? Or,
well, that's the thing, you know because, yeah.
You'd have thought maybe he might have been a decent replacement for someone like Kante, but, you know, if he'd gone to Leicester, we probably might be still going, oh. Even though they're champions, we'd go, oh. Because we all had a heart set on, I don't know, Atletico or, you know,
and
Dortmund
and
or something.
Exactly what you just said, you know, that there isn't the money in those leagues.
No.
So, you know, he'd have to take a substantial pay cut. Because I'd imagine at Stoke, I think at Liverpool he was getting around about 50,000-60,000 a week, wasn't he?
Mm.
That would have been improved to go to Stoke, I would have thought. He's not getting that in Spain, he's not getting that in France or Italy.
Where he'd also have a ton of quarantine paperwork to have to get through as well. I mean, you know, let's not overlook that. Okay, I like the fact that Ledley's back playing for Palace.
Yeah,
he's in
too.
The goals at
yeah.
both ends. He's
playing
setting
well.
Them up. He's scoring them for Palace. He's setting
yeah,
them up for the others, which I think is important, because I think he just is that glue that binds the side together, both from back to front and kind of in that little midfield unit as well. So it's good to see him back and playing. Bailey's just ticking over nicely. He scored again today against Eibar.
Yeah.
There's no injury rumours. There's very little other than like the traditional kind of every couple of weeks the Barca inclined tabloids want to come out and say that he's unsettled, but there's absolutely, you know, sweet FA in that. just very low maintenance. He just seems to be, yeah, and just is ticking over nicely, which I think is perfect for us.
Brilliant.
Just perfect.
I was sort of musing today over obviously his hair, and I just think like he's got, you know, a proper superstar footballer's haircut, and he has had for a while. And I'm just sort of thinking, you know, was he 26 now? 27.
27,
yeah.
So give it a year or so, he's going to get, you know, probably, you know, something, you know, a bit more sensible maybe. I'd like to see the sort of, you know, the progression through the footballers and through his hair. You know, when he gets to 30, you can't have a man bun, can he? So, no. What's he going to go with next, you know? It'd be interesting.
That's the question. You've also got a lot of time on your hands to be musing about on a Sunday afternoon.
I was just thinking, though, like, you know, if you think of all the great footballers, you know, generally, you know, they get that one sort of very flash haircut, don't they? As they sort of in their mid-20s, and then they sort of, they become more sensible as they get older.
Mm.
So I think since he really goes next,
he's going to go for the David Beckham shaved head thing.
Well, I was just thinking that.
Yeah. I mean, the rest of us are worrying whether he's going to be overburdened with like creative responsibility out of Vienna. You know, is he finally supplanted Ronaldo? You know, as the main man in the Bernabeu. You're the hell worrying more about his hair.
I think his hair, you know, it's important, you know. You know, if you're going to be a superstar footballer, you need a good haircut, you know. A haircut that befits your status.
They like this podcast because of the forensic detail.
Yeah. You're our Austrian football specialist, and Howell's our hair specialist.
That's right, yeah. Although you wouldn't tell it from my own hair.
Well, no, that's true. I've stopped thinking about hair a lot, actually. Anybody else is on my own. Hennessy's not playing, but Ward is top of the championship and behind a very measly defence. And I know we've kind of worried in the past that, you know, the backup to Hennessy, you know, they're not playing or not very experienced. Hennessy's not playing. I wonder whether over the next 3 to 4 competitive games, whether we're going to see Ward really now begin to exert a bit of pressure on Hennessy. Hennessy's going to be worried for his place, I reckon, going forward. I don't think he's going to be worried for it this week. And he's going to play in Vienna. He'll probably play at home to Georgia. But if he is still on the bench come Christmas and Ward has played pretty much every 90 minutes going, then I think it changes things a little bit in Coleman's mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's Wagner, it's the Huddersfield manager, who's Klopp's mate, isn't he?
Mm.
And they're doing very, very well.
Yeah.
Good move for him, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I can remember when he signed alone, people are kind of like, all right, it's good that he's got out of Liverpool because they'd signed that German keeper whose name escapes me. And
Carrius, is it?
Yeah, and who incidentally is born on exactly the same day as Danny Ward.
It's amazing.
They don't just share the same birthday, they were born on the same day in the same year.
He looked dodgy, yes. I mean, against the Swans, I thought.
People were saying.
I know, they say, oh, you can ping a lovely 60-yard pass, and he played a couple of great passes yesterday, to be fair to him, but he didn't look. He was all at sea in terms of crosses into the box. He was all over the place.
Yeah. So, Ward is playing. He's keeping the ball out as well. I don't think many of us expected Huddersfield to be contenders for the championship, and you know, it's still early days. Maybe they're not in that sense, but that's working out to be a great loan move for him.
Absolutely.
Would you reckon, Leandre, he's going to be breathing down Hennessy's neck?
Just yet, like you said, obviously Hennessy's the man at the moment for these two games coming up. But the longer it goes on, I think he's got a chance. It'd be interesting to see if we play a friendly in February. Maybe he'll get given a start in that. See how he goes. I mean, he played against Slovakia in Bordeaux. He's got experience of playing a high pressure game. I mean, I was really worried for him. You know, we were sort of right behind the goal, first half, about three rows up, so it was only sort of yards away from him, and you could tell there were some nerves there. You know, but it was understandable, and it was great. There was some sort of Wales crowd was chanting his name, sort of trying to make him feel better about sort of being there, and he looked a little bit shaky, but that's all understandable considering how young he was and what a huge game it was. I haven't seen too much of him, but it'd be great to see, you know, someone who came through the youth ranks at Rex and sort of go on to be like Liverpool's number one would be amazing. Yeah, good luck to him. It seems like a great move at the moment, doesn't it? Going to Huddersfield, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I just checked earlier as well. They've only got a goal difference of 6 Huddersfield, and they're winning games by 1-0, 2-1. And you can imagine he's probably making some good saves. I know he was reported as pulling off a couple of absolute blinders in one of the games. Well, if he's doing that in games and they're winning 2-1, you know, those saves are proving they're worth, you know, 2-3 points.
Yeah.
You know, a game. And it was a great little interview with. Well, it wasn't an interview. It was part of Kevin Ratcliffe on Radio Wales yesterday. They had a bit of time to fill. They were talking about goalkeepers, and Ratcliffe was talking about, you know, who he said, you know, he had the privilege of playing with the best in the world at the time, which I personally agree with. Although I know Big Nev thought that Reinhard Dasayev was the best keeper. I remember hearing that in a talk at Wrexham Museum a few years ago. But he was sort of saying how they reckon the year they won the championship. Ratcliffe didn't say which year, so what, 85 or 87 they won it. He estimated that Big Nev was worth, I think he said, 18 points in one of those championship seasons.
Incredible.
Based on terms of saves that he pulled off at times within certain crucial games that they then went on to win, maybe by the odd goal. Yeah, and it just got that came back to me. That was yesterday, and it was only, you know, a couple of hours before we started recording that I just sort of boned up on how Danny Ward was doing, and it came back to me because he's probably largely responsible for putting Huddersfield where they are, you know, notwithstanding the 10 people in front of him, of course. And if there's any Wales and Huddersfield fans, then feel free to correct me. But any other talking points in the squad? I mean, it's sort of picked itself. I mean, Lawrence came back, Sean McDonald came back, but we're not going to see much of those, are we? So we pretty much know who's going to be playing. It'll be 3-5-2 again. There's not much else to say, is there?
Yeah.
Do we go with Vokes or Robson Kanu, given that Robson Kanu's had a bit more game time, but not a huge amount?
Vokes.
Still Vokes.
Yeah. I mean, did you see, it was really interesting actually, on Monday Night Football, Klopp was on Monday Night Football last week, and they were talking about Liverpool's start of the season, and he talked about the Burnley game, and he talked about Sam Vokes, and how impressed with him he was. You know, his physicality, how that he could play, the trouble he caused the centre halves.
Mm.
I think that's a huge compliment, isn't it?
Mm.
You've got to go with Vokes.
We starting a rumour here.
I think it's nailed on. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Because
that obviously means, you know, January window.
That's right. Yeah.
Sam
Collymore. Sorry, Russ. Just the other day, I think Burnley beat Watford. Was it? Stan Collymore tweeted that he was really impressed with Vokes, and something like, just a shame he isn't half a yard quicker because he'd have everything. I think his all-round play is excellent, and I think he's one of those players who doesn't necessarily need to score a ton of goals to contribute, and his link-up play is good with his back to goal, strong. He scored in the last game for Wales, so, you know, go with him, I think, you know, and Robson Kanu's hardly played, so, yeah, got to go with Vokes, I think.
I suppose, you know, you can sort of say he's on a run of, what, two goals in three Wales games?
Yeah,
if you count the Portugal and the Belgium game, so, yeah, that's about as good a run as he's probably ever been on with us, so, yeah.
He's playing well, he's in form, you know. Robson Kanu, he came on for, what, a minute yesterday? Yeah, you know, he's a great option to have off the bench, and he Robson Kanu, I'd go with Vokes personally.
Mm. Rumours come out though, kind of more recently, that Pulis didn't really want him, but the club just went and signed him anyway.
I think that happens a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I know from my dad's told me a few things about, he obviously he works with a lot of people who go to the Swans a lot, and then, you know, going back to when Sousa was in charge, I know that Jenkins basically signed players over Sousa's head, players he didn't want, like brought Trundle back even though he didn't want him, and things like that.
Mm.
So that happens all the time, I would have thought.
But he's not getting a huge amount of game time, is he?
No, and you wonder, to be honest, I mean, it's an odd one because this is a guy, right, he's not picking Berahino. I don't know a huge amount about Berahino, I don't know how good he is really. But it seems odd that he's got other options. Is he really going to start Hal Robson-Carlin? I don't know.
Well, they don't play money up front, do they? Pulis is...
Well, he's got Rondon, hasn't he?
Well, that's it, isn't it? So,
you know, so we've got Rondon, we've got Berahino. He signed Nasser Chadli as well, didn't he?
Mm.
I know he's not a striker, is he? But he's quite a forward-thinking player, isn't he? So you wonder where Robson Kanu fits into that side. And that would be my concern for Robson Kanu this season. Pulis clearly doesn't rate Berahino, does he? Or he didn't like him for whatever reason.
Yeah, he's about his attitude and stuff, isn't
he?
Yeah. On the postal message board, there's a poll about what we think the score is going to be in Austria, and a draw is the most favoured result. How do you think it's going to go?
I was feeling really confident about this game, following some of our great European championships and Austria's frankly disastrous European championships. I'm less confident now for a couple of reasons. One being no Aaron Ramsey. It's a big blow for us going away somewhere like Austria is the kind of player you're likely to miss, I think. The other big worry is that it seems we're going to have to wear that absolute fucking monstrosity of a grey kit. we'll never win in this kit. So probably the draw is the best we can hope for, actually.
I mean, even Coleman has come out and slagged the kit off this week.
For God's sake, can we do something about it? Surely. Go to Adidas. Sort it out, because no one wins in grey. No one wants to play in grey.
No.
It's a terrible situation. But I heard that Arnautovic came off for Austria today in that Stoke Man United game, which that could be good news for us, because he's a big player for them. And Mark Janko, their main striker, who's, you know, one of their top scorers of all time, I think he's got 27 goals. He's been injured. He came back. He played for Basel in Switzerland yesterday. It came off after 70 minutes or so. He didn't score. So I don't know how fit he is, how fit Arnautovic is going to be. And they've only got three strikers in the squad, and I think their other two strikers, other than Janko, haven't scored for Austria. Considering our defence is pretty mean, they probably haven't got too many goals in them. They look to their midfielders to score a lot anyway. I'd feel a lot more confident if we were wearing red.
No, we got. We were missing. They got. They're missing. It's what
kit it is. A horrible kit, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's vile. Well, I voted in that poll on the message board, and I thought we might nick a goal, 1-0, something like that, because I'm not quite sure they've quite got the threat because of some of those injuries you've alluded to. But they're going to be a great side. And if 0-0 or we 1-1, we'll be happy with that. Because what we want, we're looking for, I mean, 6 points would be great from this double header, but 4 points would be fine. What do we think?
I take a draw. I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult going out there. I mean, I fancy a draw. I to be honest, I might snap your hand off for a draw. You offer me that now, I take that all.
Because it's a big double header for Austria, isn't it? I mean, they've got us at home, and then they go to Serbia then on the Sunday, and you know, that puts a bit of pressure on the home leg, as it were, of those two games, to want to be going into that Serbia game with 3 points.
Mm.
So, you know, if they need to come at us, you know, we're fairly comfortable playing a little bit more on the break and a bit more counter-attackingly. So you could see him maybe going with the likes of maybe Tom Lawrence, people with a bit of pace up front, to try and sort of stretch them a little bit. But I just wonder whether it puts a bit of pressure onto Austria. It's not as if they dropped points in the first game, but they weren't, by all accounts, particularly impressive. You know, they were probably lucky to get the 3 points in Georgia. So, you know, pressure was on their back a little bit as well, I think. So I wonder whether there's just a little bit of pressure going into them, particularly off the back of a dismal Euros. It's probably their first home game since the Euros.
Yeah, it is. The press is on Alaba's back a bit as well, which... It's quite a big story, because he's their superstar player, really. I noticed he wasn't in the starting lineup for Bayern Munich yesterday as well. I'm not quite sure if he's in the best of form. He hasn't been for Austria for the past year or so. He was excellent in qualifying for the Euros, but he didn't really turn up at the tournament. And he's their main man, really, in midfield. Everything goes through him. He's like their playmaker. Even though he usually plays left back for Bayern Munich, although he has played in a few different positions. So, yeah, they're going to be feeling a bit nervous about this game, and I think nervous about facing Bale, and you know, there's a lot of talk about just what a superstar player Gareth Bale is, and they're a bit scared of him, has to be said, especially as their defence isn't the most experienced. With Fuchs having retired from international football, who was their captain as well, looked quite shaky defensively. They didn't look like much of a unit against Georgia. Georgia kind of pulled them apart a few times, hit the post, and should have done better when they got through into to shooting positions. But their fullbacks aren't so experienced now, and Dragovic, who's at Bayer Leverkusen, I think, is their sort of like main man at the back. But he's not really sort of seen as a defensive leader in the way that Fuchs was. I think there'll be opportunities for us. I don't think they're, as a unit, their defence is anything like as solid as our sort of back five unit. So Bale should get one or two opportunities, I would imagine.
He's the years.
Yeah.
So okay, we'd set up for a point on Thursday. We then come back to Cardiff, Georgia at home. You say Georgia, you know, had their chances in their game against Austria. I think they're going to be better than Moldova were, because I was quite disappointed with them. I think we sort of bigged them up a little bit, to be honest. You know, by sort of saying they didn't lose many games by many goals and didn't concede more than two, but they were absolute garbage. So I think Georgia are going to be a step up. Georgia have got, they're playing in Ireland first up and then coming to us. So they've got two away games. They were quite weak on crosses though, weren't they, against Austria?
Yeah, I think that's going to be something that we should look to exploit. Two headers, I think. It was Janko scored one of them, which was just a sort of quite simple cross that just stood up at the back post. So I think folks could maybe get some joy against Georgia, looking at the chances that they conceded against Austria. Yeah,
and you know, you can see maybe Bale getting on the end of a couple of crosses as well. I mean, I just hope we can kind of come through the first game unscathed, because we've had that in the past where we go into a doubleheader missing players, we then lose another couple, and it just puts a bit of pressure on us. I remember the Bosnia-Cyprus game was like that early on in the last campaign, and then we came through it, I suppose. But, you know, they're not the most enjoyable of games, are they? There's a little bit of anxiety there. The other fixtures, you've got Ireland, Georgia, Thursday, you've got Moldova, Serbia, and then Serbia hosts Austria, which I think is a big game for the group as a whole. And then Ireland travel to Moldova. So Ireland are probably looking they had a point, didn't they, in Serbia?
Yeah.
So they're probably looking for 6 points from those two games. But I also think it's one of those groups where teams are going to take points off each other.
Yeah.
And if you could see Ireland dropping a couple of points home to Georgia, or, you know, Serbia, you know, getting held in Moldova or something, I think this is going to be a big, big weekend, actually, for the group.
I think
there's something going to happen. I just got this sense that something's going to happen that's just going to go, okay, that is going to be of advantage to us now in terms of how it's all panning out.
Mm.
So I've long thought that this group will have teams taking points off each other.
And that's why if we lose out in Austria, it's not the end of the world, is it?
Well, no, because I think, as I said this as well, is that I can't see Georgia Moldova going through this whole campaign without a point. So I think actually for all the talk about how Austria is strong, there were dark horses going into the Euros, and Serbia, we don't do well in Eastern Europe and all that sort of stuff, I think what it might actually boil down to is if we can take 6 points off both Moldova and Georgia,
yeah,
that puts the pressure on the other teams to not drop points against them.
Yeah, do that and win your home games.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, you look at this and you kind of think, okay, we're not playing Moldova. Ireland are playing both of those sides. Which team is going to be dropping? And anyway, it could be us against Georgia, don't get me wrong. I just wonder whether there's something in that. And if someone's dropping points against one of those teams now coming up, I mean, it's just an interesting dynamic for the group. The other talking point, I think, is in terms of the away following going out to Vienna. I read somewhere on Twitter that said it was the biggest following since the Milan game. But then someone sort of thought that there was actually quite a lot went out to Croke Park in 07, I think it was.
Yeah.
So if it's not the biggest, it's one of them. Over 4,000 gone, which is, you know, fair play, it's really impressive.
Yeah. It's a
funny irony to the fact that I'm going with my this game, because the first Wales game I took it to was against Estonia at Parky Scarlett at Llanelli.
Oh.
And the crowd there was just over 4,000, I think. There's actually going to be more Wales fans in Vienna on Thursday.
That is amazing, isn't it?
2008.
Fantastic concourse in that south stand, wasn't it? The concourse in Parker Scarlett, it's lovely, especially in the winter because it's heated.
Just staring at empty seats and West is best.
I mean, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Could have hosted that game at Stephen Heath.
Yeah.
We Parker Scarlett.
It's a good little ground step, though. It's 2.80, I think, San Miguel as well, so can't fault it, really. And of course, Lee Trundle plays there, so, you know. It's just better and better.
In about 5 weeks, he's going to be gracing the merch field in his powers.
Yeah.
Assuming his Swans ambassador role doesn't.
Only if the Swans aren't.
Yeah, which is a bit of a disappointment, but I'm sure Lee will be saying to Hugh Jenkins, saying, listen, can I book some leave, Hugh? Mr. Jenkins, please, sir, can I book some leave? Because, lifetime ambition gracing the merch field, I'm sure. Okay, well, I mean, are there any other talking points? Have I missed anything out?
So going back to what you were saying before about we lose, it's not the end of the world. I just feel generally really relaxed about this game. I'm not usually like this so early in the group, and when it comes to games which could be seen as crunch games like last time out, I knew that game against Bosnia, it was absolutely crucial that we didn't lose it, and I was really nervous about that for weeks before, and I was just really on edge about that game, and I was thinking, oh, if we lose this, it's another campaign over, because you've got to kind of grind something out at home, at least in the first game, and get the crowd behind you and build some momentum. Now we've actually sort of qualified and gone to a tournament and done well, I find I'm just so much more relaxed about Wales games now. I really want to get to the World Cup, because that's another level up again from the Euros. I'm desperate to see us at a World Cup, but I just generally feel that bit more relaxed about Wales now. I wonder if you guys were the same.
Well, they say, don't they, that players on the pitch will feed off the kind of the anxiety and the tension in the stands when fans start kind of getting on their backs and things like that. And I just think I'm increasingly of the view now that it also works the other way. Because our players seem so relaxed in how they're going about their business, that actually we as fans are now feeding off that. So that we're actually kind of going into these games kind of going, well, all right, Ramsey's out, but so-and-so comes in, and then this happens, but, we can deal with this because we've had other obstacles and we've navigated them and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's kind of that reverse process. The players seem so relaxed and comfortable in their skin and in how they're playing and the kind of the atmosphere in camp. And like you said, I can't remember which one of you said it earlier, the message that Coleman is sort of putting out there to the players and reinforcing in his press conferences, it's all going and serving to make us feel so much more relaxed.
Yeah, of course.
Because I can remember what you said about that Bosnia game, Leon. I mean, I can remember, and I couldn't go to that game, but I can remember I could not sit still. I was pacing that night. I was just on the phone. I couldn't get a signal where I was. And just could not, couldn't sort of switch off, and felt really kind of nervous. There was a real nervous kind of energy about that game. I think, to be fair, we didn't deserve any better that night than 0-0. And Bosnia probably were a little bit unlucky not to nick it. And I know we had that Bale had that sort of chance flashing across the front of goal towards the end, but we probably rode our luck a little bit. I mean, we weren't helped by the referee that night, I know. But yeah, no, that was a nervy, nervy game. And I think it was still nervy then against Cyprus. And although we got those two early goals which helped, then we got the red card. But we've come from being a bit anxious as fans to now being like really quite relaxed.
Yeah.
So yeah, nice, I don't know whether there's anything in that sort of theory, but I think it's, it's not us in the stands making them feel nervous and anxious. It's them performing with such a degree of just sort of relaxation that we're then sort of feeding off that vibe, There we go. Probably should have a word for Gareth. He did the Cardiff Half Marathon today. He's probably still in an ice bath somewhere, is he? That's why he can't join us.
I would imagine
so. Is that how these things work?
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Fair play to him. He was going to be in. He said he was going to be in the sub 2-hour category.
Yeah, fair play to him.
So. top man. Good effort.
Gareth, if you're listening, we were there in spirit with you all the way. I was having fried breakfast in Canton this morning, just as he was sort of starting, to be honest, but there we go. A couple of things you got coming up. We did a podcast last year around sort of kits, Wales kits, and we kind of stopped short at the Kappa, when Kappa got involved in the early 2000s. So Simon Shakey, Wales Match Worn on Twitter, worth a follow, is going to pen us something about the Kappa kits, which I'm a big fan of. Not that I'm necessarily best built to pull them off anymore.
I was
going to
say, you have to be in shape to wear the Kappa kits. And...
yeah. So Shakey's going to pen us something, and that's going to be a nice little lead into to a podcast we're going to record with him as well. And I've just dug out, we did a poll a while back. We still need to get around to this. And the people have spoken. And like Brexit, the people are, you know, if that's what they've said, you've got to go with it. You know, Brexit means Brexit. And so after the Yorath years, we did a poll, and it was neck and neck, but it's the Hughes years. And the Hughes years means the Hughes years. We can't backtrack. So we need to decide if it's going to be a hard or a soft Hughes years. I sense we might get a bit hard on him. But yeah, so we've got that one coming up probably sometime next month as well.
Yeah, great, yeah.
And we'll do our best to kind of keep fueling these evokes to Liverpool rumours that you've now started.
Nailed on. Yeah, it's done deal.
You,
obviously, I'd have to put my feelers out to my people, you know, yeah. But I'll be able to confirm by the next podcast.
You heard it here first. Let's be honest, Liverpool have signed worse players.
Oh, yeah, loads worse.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, so thank you, gents. Leon, I look forward to catching up with you in Vienna.
Yeah, see you on Thursday. Hopefully, I'm going to try and write something in the next couple of days. It might be quite a short piece, but about the history of Wales against Austria.
Mm.
I mentioned it a while back. I'll try and get that done before Tuesday.
Mel Charles's autobiography is worth, if you can dig that out and lay your hands on it, which might be difficult in Innsbruck, because there's a chapter dedicated to the so-called Battle of Wrexham against Austria, in which he was involved. And it's the game in which, I think he says, I might be wrong here, but I think he said, because John Charles never got booked in his career, but he should have got booked, possibly got a red card in that game, because it was so brutal, and Mel took an absolute wallop off one of the Austrians. And John Charles kind of thought, right, I'm going to have to dish out some brotherly retribution. So yeah, that was against Austria. That was in Wrexham in like 57, something like that. But there's been big games, isn't there?
Yeah, the game in 75 where Arthur Griffiths scored. It's still the only time we've topped a qualifying group.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was a good Austria team at the time. Went to the World Cup a couple of years later and beat West Germany, who were the reigning champions. So that's it shows you how good a team we beat then. Coleman's debut, he scored against Austria in 92, I think.
Yeah, tweeted it out the other day, and I'd forgotten that the guy who crosses the ball for him. Go on. This is really nerdy. Lee Nogan.
Really?
Yeah.
Nogan.
Yeah, Lee Nogan. It's a tidy little run from him, and it's a tasty little cross. And I can't quite work out from the YouTube clip who Coleman nicks it off the toes of. What he's doing with about 4 minutes to go from the end of the game up in the opponent's box, I don't know. But he did score a few goals, didn't he? He used to get on there for a centre-back. He used to get a few, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He's a good player.
Yeah. Oh, look forward to that, Leon. You have to get it for me before Wednesday mid-morning, though, because I'm flying up then, so...
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to put any pressure on you.
Tuesday, really, at latest, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
All right, OK, I've stayed now, so I'll really aim to get that done.
Better get rigged in.
Yeah. Gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. I look forward to seeing you in Vienna, Leon, next time, Harold.
Pleasure.
And hope when we next get round the mic, it's at least 4 points better off. 6 would be perfect.
Yeah. She wouldn't be a disaster.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. Cheers, deal.